Welcome back to the Enneagram Panels podcast. I'm Jim, and this is part two of our discussion on the overlap between spiral dynamics and the Enneagram. If you missed part one, make sure you go back and listen to that first. And we are excited to announce we do have season two coming. Season two of the Enneagram Panels podcast is going to focus on the growth of each type. So make sure you subscribe so you see when that comes up. But for now, we're just going to jump right in to part two of our discussion on spiral dynamics and the Enneagram. Enjoy. And the problem in spiral dynamics, it can show you a map of how we got here, but there's actually very little tools to deal with the personal relational elements that are influenced by these memes. And all change is relational based. All real work that happens that transforms the world for the better is going to be on the personal level. That's why I think it's good to see the spiral dynamics map. But then if we want to see real change, we've got to overlay it with a tool. And we've been using the Enneagram because that's been about the most effective that we've seen for that.
Mm. Yeah, I guess my frustration with spiral dynamics was, as much as I loved it, it left me with, okay, but how do you grow? How do you go from, you know, levels of consciousness to other levels? Because it is not without consequence. If a person is stuck at, say, blue, but everything around them in their world is showing, you know, orange complexity, and it's calling for that growth in them or in an institution. How does that institution change? It can resist and it can rebel because it has willpower. And so it continues to do so oftentimes, much to its own detriment. So I get friends who told me that they attend a church that's still functioning very, very blue, avoiding science, kind of just, here's how it is, and this is the truth, and people out there don't want the truth, and blah, 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 and going on and on and on. Meanwhile, trying to draw people into its membership, trying to grow. And it's failing, even though it's primed, it's a position to really grow location-wise and everything else. So what's happening there is it's a blue meme that's resistant, completely resistant of orange, even though it is in the city, in one of the largest cities in America.
Oh, wow.
There is no city in America that is functioning as blue primarily. It's functioning mostly as orange.
Orange-billed cities.
Orange, absolutely.
Large cities, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, so, I mean, you're looking at problems. We've got problems, folks.
Yeah.
So, and this is happening in politics. It happens in the church world. It happens at work, and it happens at home. So what happens when this is going on? You know, I think it's important to understand that there is a way, or I should say, here's my theory. There is a way to actually grow. And this is where the Enneagram becomes a powerful tool for transformation. So let me use an actual example and we'll work from that. There's a type nine that is married to, let's say, a type three. Let's pair those up. Type nines are peacemakers, self-effacing, self-forgetting, conflict-avoidant, beautiful, warm people. So the type nine who is that way could appear in a group as being somebody who is in the green meme. I value everybody's story. I love pluralism. I'm all about lots of people. We need to make sure that they're cared for. Doesn't matter who they are. And so they can appear from the distance, even from fairly up close, as being people that generally are pretty green in their value meme. Or they could be seen as even yellow, having reached to that place of just valuing all types and seeing how they can all be have their place in the sun. You know, if a nine is running the meeting, the nine seeks to make peace. And so it'll work towards finding a spot for every person in that group, right? That seems very yellow. That seems either green or yellow, right? But what's happening for this nine, and I know one who is that way in public, but in private tells me how horrified they are by the fact that these people have these beliefs that are very anti-Bible, not within that larger myth framework, and they're troubled by it. But they're never going to cause conflict. They're never going to speak about it. They're just going to continue to ask gentle questions and try to explore and be kind.
You're saying they're really coming from the blue meme as a nine.
They're a blue.
So people perceive them as being more of the green yellow meme, but their internal world, what they think when they actually pull back and say, "What do I think?" which the nine has trouble doing.
Correct. Yeah.
But when they do that, that's coming from a blue place.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So this helps people to understand what we mean and what the authors like Don Beck and Ken Wilber mean by what a consciousness level really is and how it functions. That's an example that I think is probably a really good one to explain that, because it's not something that they're aware of. It's something that's functioning underneath and they don't see it, but it's definitely creating a framework, a paradigm in which they see things. I know a guy who is a type 3, and I believe he's an orange 3. So someone might look at orange and say, well, they are already pretty pragmatic, and type 3s are pragmatic, right? So you have 3s that are very practical, success-oriented, self-motivated, self-driven, busy. So it seems to dovetail beautifully with orange. So some people might get confused by that and say, well, geez, well, is it a 3? Is it the orange? What's going on here? What's happening is you could be a 3 and have blue. I know a lot of 3s who are blue. I've got friends who are very much in that world. In fact, when I know that because if ever I ask them about the rules of the spiritual game, if ever I ask them to think about something differently, it freaks them out, because for the 3, they need to be successful in every area of life, including their own spirituality. And if I change the rules or the rules change, they freak out. They don't like that. They like to know, what are the rules so that I can function within that? Even if they're not looking at the rules and looking to maybe even bend them a little bit or to get it to win, they just need to know the game. How is it played in order for me to be able to succeed? And so that would be the 3 at a blue level would want to know, what are the rules of the spirituality? At an orange level, they still want to know the rules, but it's much more now at this point about whatever works and however works. Success is measured by not adherence or really doing well within the blue framework, but doing well within the orange framework. The other one that's been confusing for a number of people is the conservative element that's within the evangelical world seems very one-like, because it's highly rules-oriented. It's focused on right and wrong, good, bad, us, them, that sort of thing. So they would – some people think of the conservative movement – well, you could look at the conservative movement as either being blue or one. Some people will confuse those two. Ones are rules-oriented. Well, blue is rules-oriented. Is there a similarity? Is there an overlap? And so sometimes when we're interviewing certain types – and I'll give an example of one type that a couple of them, actually two fives who don't know each other, came out as really – wanting to abide by rules. Rules were very important to them. Right and wrong was important to them. But it just so happened that both were raised in highly rules-oriented environments. Hmm. So for them, they look like they might have been a one, but it turned out in the end that they really connected much more with the five motivation. It wasn't that they were confused between necessarily the five and the one as much as it is that they're a five that was raised in a very strong blue world and environment. So that's the cultural overlay on top of the type that I think can sometimes confuse. So this is the reason why understanding spiral dynamics plus the Enneagram is helpful, because you start to understand, if you're raised in a rules environment, you're going to have a blue meme plus B, your type, and it affects how, you know, your type looks as well.
So if you're a blue 6, that would be pretty intense, because you're coming from a place of fear, and then there's on top of that, there's this, if I break the rules, then I'm afraid for my life, my eternal soul, whatever. So you put certain combinations are going to make moving out of that meme considerably more difficult.
Absolutely, yeah.
A 6 is going to have a harder time moving out of blue than maybe a 4 would.
Sure. Or maybe a 7 who is even less concerned about rules than perhaps other types are. And so the seven will eagerly move forward. But seven will appear to eagerly move forward and have no problem navigating the memes and can appear like, oh, I've jumped several memes in the last week. I'm already up to coral, you know, and have no idea what coral actually is. But that's okay because the seven read something about it and the seven feels excited about it, wants to talk about it. And so, you know, to someone else can seem like they're jumping through different memes. They're not jumping through memes. It's that the interest in the seven keeps them looking around at different things, but without ever fully committing in some respect, which means embodied, like heart, body, and mind, and not just mind running off to different things as a way to keep itself interested, as a way to keep running from the pain of whatever darkness that they're feeling is there, is present. So sevens are notorious that way. I mean, and I speak for myself as a seven. We're always running. We're always trying to explore something new. But there's a gift in that because we do discover things. But as we explore it, the question is, now are we going to fully enter into that? Can we get into that? So a six, yes, a six will struggle with that. Particularly sixes feel loyal to groups. And so that becomes a big factor. Loyalty is a big factor in why people have hard times sometimes moving forward in their own growth, whether it's through the Enneagram as the tool for growth or spiral dynamics. So there are definitely compromising factors for each type. I don't think there are types that are uniquely capable of shifting more easily than others. I just think that in all different ways we're capable of doing it and actually benefiting one another if we recognize it. For example, the four who's the artist. The four who's the artist, when they are in their art, the rules are out the window for the four. They don't think in terms of rules. They think in terms of beauty, right? So they can already access parts of themselves through that meditative practice of getting into that their imagination, getting into a quiet place and being able to produce something utterly beautiful. And that compels the rest of us to look at things differently, look at things that we haven't looked at, look at things from a different light. And you could do that. You could go right up and down the numbers and do that with each type. And I think see the beauty, the way of thinking, see the gift that each type has in terms of growth, so long as that type is leaning towards health, you know, and not in complete disintegration.
Yeah, that's a really good point because it really is about that. It's not about the spot that they're in, but it's like the healthy version of that. I mean, even red, which when I look at it, it looks like the most destructive, and wherever it's shown up on the planet, it is very destructive. But there is a healthy aspect of needing to break free of that. And if someone, you know, they're very stuck in a system that is tribal, superstitious, conspiracy theory basis, you have a lot of that now. I didn't mention that earlier, but I think a lot of conspiracy theory people are very purple. And then you add on top of that an unhealthy six that's afraid of everything, or an unhealthy five that's just seeing patterns everywhere. It's hard to see a healthy version of some of the memes, like purple and red. And I was thinking about how conspiracy theorists, there's a lot of purple in there. They're drawing correlations. They're connecting things that don't exist. But if you have an unhealthy five that is also purple, that's going to be a really rough combination.
For sure. As you said, fives, so for those who don't remember, fives are the types that tend towards spending a whole lot of time in their heads. So fives are very thought-oriented and can see patterns and can see connections where other people can't. That's a gift, but it also has its downside because fives can see connections where they don't belong. And so now adding the purple meme to it, you could see if they were a healthy purple, where in that stage of development back a few thousand years ago, or in places right now in our world where purple's still very much the value meme of that particular tribe or culture, they could still be a healthy purple because there's no demand on greater thinking or complexity. So they can still be a very healthy purple who sees connections in the right ways. But at this stage in our level of complexity, that wouldn't really work. And it would work against what we now know. For example, if you take orange science, and we know that the Earth revolves around the sun – But let's say you had a couple thousand years ago the purple meme, and you have a five, purple. And they're saying, no, you know, we know that the that everything revolves around the planet, you know, planet Earth. And they're attempting to describe something or explain something or teach something. They could be completely healthy in that space, moving people forward towards their own growth and development, particularly if it has to do with leading people towards a higher level of love, a higher level of compassion, a higher level of caring for the world around them. If it's leading in that direction through the purple meme, then that's adequate. I mean, so you could actually say that somebody who's a five purple from 2,000 years ago could have been far healthier than a five orange today, because a five orange could be just purely whatever works, and that's okay, even if it hurts other people or, you know, hurts the earth or whatever. I don't, you know, it's fine. Whereas I think each value meme's intention and purpose is really to move us not only towards accepting the complexity that's increasing on the earth, but to also change us into to being better people. I think that's ultimately the goal, is we are becoming better people. And I think if it's doing that, then at whatever level we're at, we can be helpful. So I can help somebody who's still blue. I'm not looking down my nose at the blue level at all. I can look at that and say, great, this is where you are. Now let's help you to be the healthiest, you know, nine blue or five blue that you could possibly be, you know. That's why I think the transformation is helpful to them. It becomes their next step. Instead of what's happening right now is green is demanding that blue look like them, and blue is demanding that red look like them, and on and on and on it goes. Like you mentioned, the illustration of the West going to Russia, of us going to Russia trying to make the Soviet Union into this orange, and they were red. They hadn't gone yet to blue. Instead of actually understanding, if you're at red, how could you be the healthiest red you could possibly be? So that when the time comes and the complexity develops, you can actually grow into more of the blue. It's just respecting people and understanding where they are and helping them take their next step, not your next step, and wherever you are. And once again, it's an issue of complexity and an issue of development, not an issue of who's better than whom.
Yeah, we talked about on the most recent Different Together podcast how we tend to see everyone who isn't exactly where we are with suspicions. So we look at people with more freedom with us with judgment, like they shouldn't be doing that, and those with less than us with contempt. And this is what the memes tend to do too, you know. Orange looks at green and it's just like, just judges them. You're just hippie tree hugging. That's not practical. That's not how the world works. And then it looks at blue as like with this contemptuous, like you backwards. What was it? Bill Maher put it. He's like, oh, sure. Come on in here and talk about the knowledge of the Iron Age, and like making fun of a person who had a spiritual background, who took value in the spiritual stories of, I can't remember what religion tradition they were part of, but he's like, yeah, he just wrote them off as sort of this contemptuous, you're just this backwards
yeah.
blue meme.
Yeah.
That is the tendency. And so a lot of times we don't tend to value the other person and where they're coming from. And that is one of the things that actually prevents us from working together and finding the solutions we need to find. Because there is just this attitude towards whoever isn't exactly where we are of contempt or judgment.
There is so much of that keeps us from growing. I think of how, so as I said, five purple from 2,000 years ago could be a far healthier person than, say, a five orange, green, or yellow today. And what I mean by that is, because someone might say, well, then what's the point of development then? What's the point of ascending to higher levels of understanding or of awareness? And the point I would make to that is there is no goal. We're not trying to drive anybody towards yellow thinking. What we're trying to do is recognize that wherever you are, there is a next step for you to take, and that next step, if it's taken well, it will be healthy for you, and it'll be healthy for the world around you. But this is where I think not only being aware of your meme, your value meme, but also being aware of your Enneagram type can play a significant role in this. Because if I'm talking to a three, orange, I'm talking to somebody who already thinks success is the most important thing. So I need to be aware that that's what's going on within them. And for me to ask them to not be successful is a no-win situation. That's never going to work for them. But if I'm able to work with them from their three type and say, well, we want you to be successful in this area. We're not asking you to slow down production in this country. That's not what we're asking. In fact, we think you could increase and get even better at it and also do good in this world. Then now we're moving forward. I think if we're looking at our types as well and saying, why am I driven to success, or why am I driven to making sure that everybody's story is heard? If I'm a nine and I'm saying, oh, yeah, I totally value everybody's story and I'm so green and I'm all into this stuff and I really – and yeah, but is it because you're avoiding your own? Is it because you're avoiding what's going on inside of you? Wow. Because if you are, then it's actually may not be green. It may be green, but it's very unhealthy, and it may not be green at all. It may be something else. So it's really about tuning into what's going on in you so that you can do your own growth. And as you do your own growth, here's what I've discovered. I'm starting to see some types who are clients of mine who are actually having shifts in consciousness. That is really, like, amazing, because I all they're doing is doing their work and something's happening inside them.
Could you talk a little bit about, I think it's Ken Wilber makes this distinction between growing up and waking up. And so much of spiral dynamics is about growing up, but so much of the Enneagram is really about waking up.
You know, again, everything is self-aware. To me, the number one problem is the lack of self-awareness in this world. If you believe in the evolutionary model, this is what happened when we came out of the trees, began to form groups of people, began hunting, foraging, you know, all this. Eventually, we developed this prefrontal cortex, which allowed us this thing called the rational brain to be able to do self-reflection, right? To pause, to actually make decisions, to actually think about what we were doing and to think about who we are and all this other stuff. This is the sort of thing that begins to interrupt this movement from impulse to gratification, to meeting that need without ever any thought in between. I'm hungry, I eat. I want to reproduce, I have sex. You know, it's just instant right to doing that. We still function a lot this way, where there's something, a trigger. We call it a trigger today. Something triggers us and we have this response, knee-jerk reaction. We're not even aware that we are having it. We're not even aware that there's something that was triggered inside of us, except that we have this immediate, visceral, emotional response and we react right away. So it's interrupting that with this thing called self-awareness. What am I doing? What am I feeling right now? What is it telling me to do? If we can move to that, we start to have these moments of awakenings where, oh, this is what I'm about to do. And this is the result of that. And then for those who've done practiced meditation, prayer, today there's a lot around that that's producing these wakeful moments for people. Mm. In the Pentecostal charismatic world, we've had these wakeful moments, these awakenings from the early 1900s. These were epiphanies, enlightenments, moments of seeing things differently. Ken Wilber's theory is you have moments, small moments of seeing, but that doesn't shift your meme yet. You can see a little bit. You have glimpses into it is my language for it, for how he puts it. And I do think that that's how it happens. I do think that there's moments of awakening and seeing, but then we have these spiritual experiences. We have these moments of understanding. But then what happens is we interpret that through the language of our current value meme.
Oh, interesting.
So it sort of minimizes or dilutes it. It just reduces it a little bit. And I think that's what my encouragement to people is when they have an experience, stay present to that experience without trying to put words to it. Don't put words quite yet to it, because the level of awareness or awakening or consciousness at this moment right now is still present with you. Your experience is exceeding that, right? So this spiritual sort of powerful, like this aha moment that's just power. Not the small, like, oh, I get it, but really something significant spiritually that happens to them. We don't have to often have a lot of them, but the ones that we do have, you know, encourage people to hold on to that. Don't go into interpretation yet. Just be present to it. It's messing with you, yes, and you're longing to kind of wrangle it in, wrestle it in, tame it, get control of it, but don't do that. Stay present to it. Yeah, so in my tradition, the Pentecostal tradition, and then the Charismatic tradition, we have these epiphanies, these awakenings, these powerful spiritual experiences, oftentimes in gatherings with people, with very intense types of times of prayer and with a lot of music and all that. That creates an environment for that. And in the Eastern tradition, things similar to that, meditation, and that has come into our world. I mean, through globalization, we have access to all of this stuff, and people are practicing it today and are having real significant changes through the practice of mindfulness, of meditation, taking time away, and really just being very awake to themselves. This is what helps us to become awake and self-aware. And then when we have these big epiphany type of moments, we just stay present to them. We're getting into the practice of just, okay, before I put words to it, before I interpret it, before I stay present to it until it's had its effect of changing my value meme, whatever it is, whatever term we want to put. We're using spiral dynamics right now, but whatever model you want to use, it has that effect of changing us.
So much of this self-awareness and experience too, it reminds me of something my friend says about how often we try to formulate the experiential. And waking up is such an experiential thing, to experience that which is beyond ourselves. The people have experienced in the spiritual traditions and meditation are these moments of awareness. Then there's something about, I don't know if it's the orange meme or something that we live in so much dominated right now, but it immediately wants to formulate that and package that and give us steps to that. And there's something about that that actually prevents, I think, some of that stuff from taking root to the full extent that it actually could.
The moment you formulate anything, you're formulating it in the value meme that you live within. And so, to my mind, it's really allowing the thing to form you rather than you trying to form it. It's allowing it to have its full effect on you, because the experience wants to do that. But there is a drive and an ambition within the orange world to package it, to reproduce it, to get it out there. Here's how you do this. Here's how you have these experiences. This is what can happen to you. But in the Pentecostal, early Pentecostal beginnings, there was none of that. In fact, it was sort of hidden. But people were having these really amazing experiences that were affecting their levels of awareness and consciousness. But you can see where the experience exceeds their level of consciousness. It exceeded it so far that in order for them to continue in it, yeah, they had to sort of come back to their meme. And I think, again, this is why I encourage, to the best of our ability, let's stay with the experience and see if we can stay with it a little bit longer than what we're comfortable with, and see if it changes something within our way of seeing and thinking, and let that guide us, as opposed to trying to immediately gain control of it based upon our understanding.
So there's different schools of the Enneagram, and you coming through the school of the Enneagram and the narrative tradition, it really does look at the Enneagram types based on their motivations, like what is motivating this individual. And I think spiral dynamics does the same thing. There's like an overlying motivation. So talk a little bit about like how to view our motivations in the light of these tools. When you're interacting with people, you're realizing you may be dealing simultaneously with a couple different motivations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the motivation in the Enneagram is, you know, as we've said before, it's core to the type. And so let's use an example of a type two who needs to be helpful, need to be seen as helpful by the world around them, and need to meet those needs primarily through the emotional center, reading the world around them, forgetting their own needs. If you have a type two that's in the, let's say, the blue meme rules, they will have a need to follow those rules. There's going to be that driver. And so if they're in a church world, which twos find themselves oftentimes in church worlds where there's plenty of opportunity to meet needs. And so they're serving, they're meeting the needs of people around them, and they're in a blue environment, and they know the rules, and they know what to believe and so forth. It gives them a sense of security and of comfort. I know where I'm at. I know what I need to do in order to flow in here and be able to be seen as helpful and be welcomed into a relationship. The worst thing for a two would be if suddenly they were thrust into a church that had a completely different meme value. Twos tend to be more towards practical. They tend to want to know, how do I help? How do I get involved? They're looking around and they're trying to fit in, trying to get into relationship with these people. But the way that these people think is so different, and the way they approach life is so different, that it can be very unsettling for that type who is driven by this need, this motivation to be helpful to this group. And so they will seek out needs. They'll still find needs. They'll still meet those needs. But I've seen twos make shifts in sometimes different environments like that, where it is a different value meme. And it's uncomfortable because they're trying to figure out, what exactly do you think about this, and how can I be part of this group? And and so they can feel very much on the outside for a little bit as they try to figure out how to get in and be part of that group.
Do you think one of the reasons that we often don't feel like we fit in our environment is because there is this overlap of these two different values, two different memes, two different motivations internally that we find ourselves around, and we just go, I don't know how I fit.
Yeah, I think you're running into that as I'm running into that with a lot of folks who are reaching out to us, telling us that they're in full out deconstruction, and they don't seem to be understood, really, is the issue, is that they're part of a network, of a group of people. So I'll use the blue meme in the church world because that's what we're hearing a lot from. And people that are, they're growing past that, and they're getting more into orange, or they were orange blue, but now they've kind of orange green. So I think a lot of the people in the church world are orange blue, depending upon, and I wouldn't be able to dice the difference between whether it's predominant. I mean, the culture is definitely blue, but there's a lot of orange people within the church world, and they have a smaller blue in them, but then they're starting to lean more towards now green. And they are contacting me and contacting you and other people we know that and saying, I don't know how I fit in here anymore, right? But if they're not aware of what their type is doing also, is that their type is how they're manifesting their meme change. So that's key to understand. So I'm going to do a type 7 since that's me, and I'll speak for me. And what happened in the transition for me and my growth is that I could see myself being lots of orange in a blue world and lots of blue still within me. And I found myself starting to go orange-green. At the time, I had no clue that I was going orange-green. I just saw it as, I'm not comfortable anymore with this. And it was really me going more, I think, strongly orange with a little bit of green. But initially, it was strongly orange. So while it was blue with a little orange, it became blue with a lot of orange and a little less blue. And I think that's when I began asking more of the practical questions and more of the questions that had to do with, why do we do this? And why do we think this way? And what about science? And why are we rejecting science? And why are we afraid of it as a church? And I started seeing things I'd never seen before. I started seeing the tremendous fear around the questions of why. I was asking questions, and my eagerness was really to understand, but not entirely, as I began to see also my type was acting in that as well. So I'll give you an example. My desire to learn, my desire to grab a hold of the latest and greatest has always been with me. And so the latest and greatest comes around. Someone says, hey, Joel, have you heard of this? And oh, man, you talk about my ears ping right up. Like, what?
So primarily sevens are going to be interested in this round of this podcast.
Yeah. So this, but this gives you a window into the type. The type shows up. The type just does. It just, it's impossible. So I'd gone through some painful events within the church. Those are always, to me, in my mind, almost all the time, I ask somebody who's saying, so I'm going through a bit of deconstruction. I said, okay, so what bad thing happened? You know, and then that begins to, well, this happened, that happened, you know. And I even had one person say, how did you know that that was the question? Like, how would you? Because that's generally what launches our deconstruction. Totally. Is either one or a bunch of them that start to happen to us or to someone we love deeply. That's also been true. And so I'm having this these difficulties, painful events that have happened in my life. And I'm starting to ask those big questions of why. I'm starting to pull away from just the groupthink and I'm starting to ask questions as to, but what explains what happened to me? I can't explain that. And I'm really frustrated by that. And I tried to stick with Blue, but Blue wasn't working. And so as I began asking those bigger questions as to why, and I began to seek out answers, and then all the while people saying things, hey, have you heard about this? And, you know, and I'm starting to get interested in this and that and the other. And these aren't people within the church system. These are people that are not Blue. And I'm getting really interested in this stuff. And I have friends who are asking me really difficult questions that I can't answer about God and about faith. At that point, I can feel my faith slipping and I'm holding on really hard, but I'm feeling it slipping. I'm having a hard time holding on to this view of God, this view of church, this view of
so was it your... Was it your faith slipping or was it your orange meme interpretation of faith that was slipping?
It's totally the interpretation, yeah. No, it's totally that is it. It's the interpretation of it, you know. And I'd felt like my faith, if I was being honest at that time, I would have said, yeah, I feel like my faith is slipping. In retrospect, I could totally see that it was the way I saw and thought that was changing. And I was going much more into orange. And I remember for a while diving deep into just learning more about, you know, science. And for me, it had a lot to do with trying to understand the world and understand myself and my faith. And so for a while, by the way, it did work for me to kind of lean into sort of an apologetic movement that gave me a lot of orange as a way to hold on to what I felt like was slipping. But the more I leaned into it, the more I realized that it itself was not following its own ways of thinking and seeing. And so I just was disappointed by that because I really wanted to. And I ended up starting to lean more into a little bit of green. And at first I despised green because I thought, you know, I was very conservative. But I began listening to stories and little by little, I started to think that there was something missing here in my own journey. So I think the seven was showing up in that I was always chasing whatever was new and running from pain. And I think that that is how I lived out my blue-orange to orange to then, you know, orange-green and then into green, was chasing and the latest and greatest and running from my own pain. When I began doing the Enneagram work and facing my pain, not the first time, but the first time in a while, I began really facing it. Then what began to happen is instead of unhealthy versions of those orange, which I think I had quite a bit of the unhealthy version, which is very reactionary and sort of fighting against a previous meme. And then as I leaned into green, then I began to understand that that was what was going on. It was my seven running the show a lot. Doing the work of the seven allowed me to then enter a more healthy version of green, which surprisingly opened my eyes up to see yellow and be able to start to move into more of that. And I don't know, I would never say that I'm all yellow now. I would say that I definitely am appreciative of a lot of things in yellow, no longer fighting against the previous memes. So yeah, your type will show itself and will express itself, and the meme itself is expressed through your type. It's the way it kind of works, I think.
I wonder how much this is affecting corporate America when they talk about wanting to hire millennials and understand millennials and all this stuff. When you have a lot of CEOs who built the economics of this country who primarily come from an orange meme, and they're wanting to bring on these very green millennials. That's a lot of them. And wanting to hire them, wanting to market to them, to have a customer base that is millennials. But the rules are all changing on them. And I think in corporately, people are really understanding how to approach this gap that is not just generational, but there's a meme gap there and the value gap.
But it's no longer like, you know, work and work is everything. It's we want the work-life balance. We want other things. There's an interest in, you know, in many different things and enjoying life, which is something that was postponed for the boomer generation until retirement. You work really hard, then you enjoy life in retirement. They think in terms of health. They think in terms of self-awareness and self-knowledge. They think those ways. They want to know who they are. They think in terms of caring for the earth and not just doing whatever you want at whatever cost.
Well, you just brought up a really interesting piece about identity there. You actually just said, you know, they want to know who they are. There is a big push into self-actualization. This is on the marriage front too. I was thinking of Eli Finkel's book, The All or Nothing Marriage, like how there is this move towards self-actualization. Technology has made us both more connected and more isolated, more lonely than ever. And it's coming alongside this real identity of who am I? Because to an older generation, well, you are what you accomplish. You are your job. You are the company you work for. So much of it was like, well, what do you do? That was your identity.
Yeah.
This generation and the green meme in general, that's not how they answer that question.
Right.
And they don't exactly know how to answer that question because all of these different values have meaning, all of these different experiences and voices, all of those have value. So the identity piece is a big part of it. I think a lot of corporations, they understood how to crack the identity code. Like, we're going to give you one by giving you MTV, and then you're going to dress like these people. And there isn't as much of that going on. You can't bank on the fad market as much. You couldn't bank on a lot of the markets you did before. But there is this push for identity. Mm-hmm. There is this push for meaning. There is this push for who am I? And I want to discover it. And I don't want to just let a job consume every waking hour so that I don't have time to explore these things, because there is a large desire for exploration. I'm very curious as to how this is going to impact us economically as we move into the self-actualization, because there is enough affluence in order to explore some of these identity things, which is very, very important currently, which is why the Enneagram is exploding. Some of these tools that actually help us do that, because people, they want to know. But how is this going to actually impact us in how we function in the world and in our work?
It's such a big question. The desire to know oneself is increasing, and even among older people who are boomers, but it is by far among the younger generation. They don't mind being called out to personal responsibility. A lot of them don't. And I find that very interesting. Like, I can say, this part is yours to fix. And they want to hear that. At the same time, it's not just that. You know, there's an awareness that there's societal ills, but there's personal responsibility. It's kind of both. You know, they recognize both. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting mix.
It's a really good mix. It's actually a mix that gives me a lot of hope. Now, I've definitely seen a lot of people that are just interested in the self-knowledge piece. But those who want to move from the self-knowledge to the self-awareness to see themselves in real time so they can make decisions that impact how they live, I have a lot of hope whenever I see that. And there is a lot more of that happening. In the corporate world, I'm not exactly sure how this is going to shake out. If you want to have us in your organization to talk about it, I'm happy to do that and we'll help figure some of that stuff out. But we also, you know, work a lot with pastors in church world, and there is a lot of them leaving, they're bailing because they're going through their own deconstruction, because they have a wide network, and in the same day, they may talk to a blue person and an orange person and a green person. They have a network that reaches into those memes. They're talking to all of those memes. They have to have a basic understanding of where people are coming from and their motivations and their heart and a lot of empathy. But a lot of them are leaving. a lot of them are bailing. I thought I would bail. I never thought I'd go back to working in that world. But there's also something beautiful and sacred in it that I found. And so I have stayed with it. But a lot of them are leaving. They don't know how to stay because they are having this kind of deconstruction. They're having a waking up to a new thing, or they identify a lot with the green thing. And I'm in conversations with a lot of blue thinking people. And so it feels inauthentic to me, or like the system wants me to sort of perpetuate, uphold, and defend the blue, but I'm not really there anymore. And I know a lot of people who have contacted me just because I'm in that world have been people kind of moving through that experience. I have had these waking up, growing up experiences, and I don't know how I fit now in this system that was built on blue and functions largely blue. And so how do I figure out how to stay in the mix of this? Because I don't think it's inauthentic to meet people where they are. Because they're there. Yep. But there is this feeling of I'm being inauthentic if I'm staying in this kind of environment.
Yeah, because I don't believe this stuff anymore. The stuff that they're saying, the stuff that they want me to do and parrot, I can't parrot anymore.
Right.
What I needed was the freedom to be able to continue to grow and explore. So for some people, it does mean leaving. No doubt. I get that. As long as it's leaving for something and not leaving.
running away from something.
Yeah. Right. So I was eager to explore, learn more, even though I was wounded. And at the same time, I did want to have my reactions. And I did have my reactions, and I did have my running from as well. It's understanding you can do that. That's one option. Another option is you stay. But you stay with the purpose of continuing to learn and to grow, and even if it means you're getting those sources and resources from outside the system. But you're there in the system because you want to serve them. You want to serve those people. You want to help those people. If you can do that, then what you'll do is you'll continue to grow. And I do think that this is where I would say waiting until you get to yellow, the ability to then see all memes and know how to use them, you know, to better the world around you. I think it's possible that even as you're moving from blue to orange, you can still be a healthy orange and actually work with blue and serve blue if that's what you desire to do. And the reason why I encourage that is because if we don't learn how to do that, we're just going to continue to splinter. And the memes will never learn how to communicate to each other. Let alone the types, exactly. If we wait until yellow emerges fully, we're not going to have many answers for what's happening now in our world. I think it's the responsibility, if we're going to be really practical about this and lean in towards hope, which I think always makes the world better versus cynicism. I think if we do, we're saying it's possible for me as I transition from blue to more orange or orange to green or green to yellow, that I can look at the previous meme, the blue meme, and value them and work with them and learn how to communicate what I'm understanding in a language that's understandable for them, not in patronizing ways, but in honoring them. That would be the heart behind it, is I want to honor you because this is where you are. You can speak blue language if you're a green meme. You can. Cool. You can speak red language if you're a blue meme. Whatever meme you're at, we can all agree that if you are more loving to other people, more loving to yourself, more peaceful, a happier person, then you're probably going in the right direction.
Yes.
And I think when we're doing that, all memes can go, yeah, that's kind of – that would be the better thing.
Definitely hit that point where I have no problem speaking the language of a particular meme. And if I know where someone's coming from Enneagram-wise, I know I want to speak to them in their language that values where they're coming from, because I've come to the realization that it's not inauthentic. It's not about me.
That's a good point. Yeah.
That's when we cross the line, I think, and we can actually be more helpful, is when you realize, like, it's not about me. It's about connection, about relationship, about helping us be healthier. And when I do that, I move against the lower side of my meme, my V meme, my Spiral Dynamics V meme, and I move away from the lower end of my Enneagram number.
Hmm.
So I'm moving away from the low side of either of those things when I make it about connection, about other people and relating to them.
Hmm.
When I go to the low side of my V meme, the low side of my Enneagram number, that's when I'm actually more divisive. That's when I splinter relationship. That's when I'm going to hurt the organizations I'm in. That's when I'm going to hurt the family systems I'm in. That's when I'm going to hurt my friendships, everything. But when I go to the high side of those things and I realize it's not about me, but it's about our connection, then that is the higher authenticity. That is the higher way of operating with people, is to honor the other.
Yeah.
And the point of, I think, knowing these systems at all, the benefit of them, I know it can feel like a fire hose if you haven't heard about Spiral Dynamics before, but when you kind of get inside and learn these systems, the result is actually a better way to honor the other, a better way to communicate with the other who's not coming from the same place as you are, but you want to see good things with them and you want to have connection with them. Because definitely when I was in a dominant blue meme, it was about agreement over relationship. That's flipped. Now it's much more about relationship than agreement. And I think that's the whole point of these things, is moving towards that. That's why we use these tools. That's how we've found them to be useful. And that's one of the things we want to do in the world, is actually help people do just that, is actually honor the other. I'm not going to look at you suspiciously just because you're in orange four. I'm going to look at you and want to connect with you regardless if you're, you know, a six blue, like, yeah, something like that. If I have an understanding of that, if I can pick up on the signals you're giving me that tell me kind of where you're coming from, which is actually how this works a lot of times. When I'm in conversations with people and I want to know how to help them, I'm trying to look for the clues of where they are meme-wise and where they are Enneagram-wise, so that I at least have the capacity to walk through the conversation in as healthy a way as possible. That is the point of having these systems and knowing them. Yes, it's for my own self-awareness so that I can not go to my low side, but I feel like I seldom do with other people when the heart of it is I'm going to try and help them move forward. And these tools have been very useful in doing just that.
Yeah.
After people hear this, what would you recommend that they do to take their next step?
Earlier, we talked about self-knowledge and self-awareness. And I think that that, again, is the number one problem, and also the number one, to my mind, the hope for this world. The number one problem is that we're not self-aware enough. And the number one hope I have is that we can become self-aware so that transformation can take place, change can take place. Self-awareness is that ability that you have that's yours. You can't change necessarily your consciousness level. And I don't think you're responsible to change. I don't think you're supposed to try to skip through them. I also don't think you're supposed to try to change yourself except for doing the steps that are necessary, that are helpful to be healthy, and then health produces growth and change. So that's all we're saying. So when we say, what are those steps? Well, one of those steps that seems to be helpful for every single Enneagram type that I know, and Ken Wilber talks about it as in the conclusion of his Theory of Everything book on integral theory, is that of meditation. The practice of prayer, meditation, breathing, taking a few moments before reacting, and just take a few breaths, calm yourself down. That the act of just doing that brings you right into the moment. That's meditation. That's bringing you right into the present moment so you can see what's going on, what am I being triggered by. Even if you can't put words to it, you know that something's happening. And the act of doing that regularly, just daily, just a few moments, breathe four times deeply, all the way down to your belly. And then take a look at yourself in that moment. How am I doing? How's my body doing? And then how's my heart doing? How's my, you know, my emotions? What's going on there? And then where are my thoughts constantly taking me right now? What am I obsessing over? And just the act of doing that brings you into this moment of being aware of what's happening. And then as you get to know that about yourself, you can also begin to make decisions that are different. I don't want to react this way tonight. I don't want to react this way in the board meeting. So what's something that I can do that would be better? I think as you do that, just the moment by moment, doing that throughout the day, not all the time, but once or twice a day doing that, will begin to produce immense results in you. There's so much data on this that shows how much it affects us physiologically. And so that's what I would recommend for all of us to do as a way to continue to grow and to transform.
So I hope you take a few minutes today to breathe, to focus and to meditate and to experiment to see what it can actually do in you. We are so thankful for all of you who have come along on this journey with us and have found it as profound and helpful as some of us have for our personal lives. Some of us have seen the effects it's had in our families, in our workplaces, and it's just an honor to share that with you. If you can leave us a review on iTunes, we really appreciate it. It helps people find the show. And we do want people to find the show as we head into season two, talking about growth and how we grow as our unique types. If you're interested in coaching, you can contact Joel through his website at www.joelhubbard.com. You can hit up Joel Hubbard or me, Jim Zartman, through social media. This podcast is produced and made possible by Talkie Records Studio in Lynn, Massachusetts, and is also made possible by Vine 39 Church in Stoneham, Massachusetts. Thank you so much, and join us next time as we continue in season two of the Enneagram Panels podcast. Now I'm just going to let this chill hop track play. Peace out.